Today on Wings, trade unions versus gender-based violence.
We're here today to get practical.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The International Labor Organization began discussing a convention on eliminating violence and harassment at work in 2018. Their 2019 draft not only recognizes a human right to a violence-free workplace, it finds those practices counterproductive in every way and calls for zero tolerance. Among the labor leaders working towards this goal are Marika Koning, Equality Policy Advisor to the International Trade Union Congress, Vicky Smallman, Director of Women's Human Rights for the Canadian Labor Congress, and Suliana Lines, President of the Latin American Federation of Journalists. The three came together for a panel, organized and hosted by Mindy Ran, around the UN Commission on the Status of Women hearings 2018.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mindy Ran. On the International Federation of Journalists, or IFJ, Gender Council co-chair, and a freelance journalist and documentary maker. For those of you who don't know the IFJ, we are a global union federation that works to protect journalists in 147 countries with 187 affiliated trade unions and associations. We campaign to end impunity for violence against women media workers. We are part of the push for an international labor standard to help end gender-based violence in the world of work, and we promote greater access for women to work in the media and to be fairly represented by it. One of the big campaigns that the IFJ Gender Council has been working on is a push to get an International Labor Organization convention against violence in the world of work. Here to talk to us about the ILO convention is Marika Koning. She's a long-term and experienced activist working in Brussels at the International Trade Union Congress, or ITUC. She is a policy advisor for gender equality, and she'll be talking about the fight and the labor movement's campaign and support for an ILO convention on violence in the world of work, and how to get involved to support this campaign, because it is an essential tool to fight back against impunity, and we need as many of those as we can get. Marika Koning.
Thank you very much, Mindy. Yeah, the campaign we are running right now is going to be a long-term campaign. The reason why we need action to eradicate gender-based violence in the world of work is that the statistics are shocking. Like 61% of women in the service sector in the European Union face sexual harassment in the world of work. And that's the same percentage, 60%, for women in the service sector in Hong Kong, for instance. If you go to the Philippines, there women indicate that 85% of the women who have been affected by domestic violence say that it limits their access or their continuation of work, so it impacts their world of work. If you go to the US, 50 to 80% of women workers indicate that they have faced sexual harassment in the world of work. And then you have 55% of women in the flower industry in Ecuador indicating they have been affected too. So that's why we have the campaign Stop Gender-Based Violence, Support an ILO Convention. And just to give you an example of what we have been doing recently, from the 14th of February to the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day, of course, is that we had actions around the world from unions, from Peru to the Philippines, from Afghanistan to Iraq, from Morocco, Tunisia, Sweden, in France, a good number of African countries, actually around the world, really campaigning, starting, kicking off this global campaign. And we represent actually 80 million women workers. And they are really taking this opportunity to take part in the campaign. But they're not doing it alone. If I would be able to show you the pictures of the campaigns which are taking place around the world, you see they are joined by male workers who are also unionized. They are joined by trade union leaders, also fully committed to support a campaign. This convention is actually an international law. So I'm actually going to talk about the campaign part and about the ILO convention and explain a little bit about what an ILO convention is so that you get familiar with it. And we call it an ILO convention. Now, the ILO, the International Labour Organization, is the only UN agency which has a tripartite structure. That means it is comprised of representatives of the government, employers, and the unions. So there we negotiate and try to agree on adopting an international law, a convention, on violence and harassment in the world of work. And that is, of course, challenging because we need a critical number of governments to support the adoption of such a convention. Just to give you one example, what difference does it make if the moment we have an ILO convention? What then? What next? What will change? Well, actually, when an ILO convention is adopted, then governments need to ratify that convention. Now, in 2011, the ILO adopted an ILO convention for domestic workers. It was called Decent Work for Domestic Workers. And that was a milestone because 10 years before, domestic workers were not visible. They were invisible. In many countries around the world, domestic work was explicitly excluded in labor laws because it was not considered as work. And this convention really turned that whole vision around, this whole situation around. Since the adoption of this convention, 55 countries adopted labor law reforms. 25 of them also ratified the convention. And that meant that women domestic workers in the Philippines now have the right to a minimum wage. Or that in Argentina, for instance, women domestic workers negotiated a collective bargaining agreement to access social protection. So things changed for millions of domestic workers. This is what a convention can accomplish. And this is what we want to see with this international convention. Now, as we talk about a campaign to have this convention adopted, we don't want to do that alone as unions. So we are building alliances. But we want to do this together, as we actually also did with the domestic workers. We had alliances with women and feminist organizations, alliances with human rights organizations. We had alliances with migrant workers, communities, with indigenous communities. So we want to do it also with women and other communities. And as we see with the Me Too movement, we see that it's more important than ever that we are doing this together. One of the things we are aiming at is that we would like to have a definition, clear definition of what violence and harassment in the world of work, because that definition doesn't exist. So when we have a clear definition, that means we have a very clear reference as well for changing laws at the national level. We want, of course, a strong focus in the convention on gender-based violence. And we want to include measures to protect and support workers affected by violence without discrimination as to race, ethnicity, language, religion, and more. For now, it's very important that we get in touch with our governments and that we also ask employers to support a convention recommendation. And so a lot of lobbying is going on, a lot of actions in the streets is going on. Also social media. There's a lot happening now in social media, also linked to this campaign. You can join it. And actually, as IGC, we have also a website, a campaign web page, and you can sign up to an email list. So there are many ways to connect and to connect with us and to take part with us again. Thank you very much.
On Wings, that was Marika Koning, Equality Policy Advisor to the International Trade Union Congress. She spoke as part of a panel organized by Mindy Ran, co-chair of the International Federation of Journalists Gender Council. It was a parallel event to the UN Commission on the Status of Women in 2018. Again, Mindy Ran.
So we're here today to get practical. At the forefront of the trade union movement to tackle intimate partner violence is the Canadian Labour Congress, the CLC. Vicky Smallman is the National Director of Women's Human Rights for the CLC. She's worked for and with a variety of labor, political, and advocacy organizations. She will be speaking about the Canadian Labor Movement's Initiative on Domestic Violence in the Workplace, the results of a very large national survey, collective bargaining, education and legislative efforts, and why this issue has resonated with so many people. Vicky Smallman.
I'm going to start just with a couple of short quotations from some of the respondents who filled out our national survey on the impact of domestic violence in the workplace. So it's a difficult topic, and it can often be triggering for people. So I just need to acknowledge that. And if you do need to walk around or do what you need to do, you should do that. He pretended to be security and dragged me out of work. I was tired and distracted, yet work was a place where I felt safe. Confiding in coworkers helped alleviate the stress of being attacked going to the car, the unending phone calls over and over and over, and the extreme fatigue, both physically and mentally. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Canadian Labour Movement's initiative on domestic violence in the workplace. It actually is not something that we started. We were inspired by work that our sisters and brothers in Australia had done. And it's work that has extended collective bargaining protections to a couple of million trade unionists in Australia. And we were thinking, you know, this is like a really concrete thing that we can do that might help us. And some of our unions had already done some work on the issue of supporting workers who were experiencing domestic violence, other forms of gender-based violence in the workplace. But one of the things that we hadn't really done was consider the particular support that Australians had gone for, and that is the issue of paid domestic violence leave. So I'll talk about that in a minute, but first I'll tell you about our survey. So we had some researchers in Canada who were willing to work with us at the University of Western Ontario, and within about 6 months, we had a survey designed and translated and ready to go up online. We encouraged women and men to participate in the survey, whether or not they had experienced domestic violence, because we wanted a snapshot of the Canadian workforce to be able to see how prevalent this issue is. And we wanted to also explore the issue of how domestic violence, when it's experienced at work, impacts coworkers. Because it's not just about the individual person who's experiencing domestic violence, it impacts the whole workplace. So we found that, indeed, just like Australia, 1 in 3 workers in Canada had experienced domestic violence in their lifetime. And for women, it was 37%, about 17% for men. And people who were identified themselves as trans had a very high prevalence rate of something like 67%. For 82% of those people who had experienced domestic violence, their work performance had been negatively impacted. 40% said they were prevented from getting to work. So the abuser is taking their keys, hiding their bus pass, you know, cutting up their uniforms. And 52% of the people who had experienced domestic violence said they had experienced the violence at or near their workplace. They're experiencing it in many different ways, you know, but a lot of it is by harassing phone calls, emails, text messages, calls to the employer, calls to coworkers, stalking, and showing up to work. And 35% said their coworkers were impacted negatively as well. The really depressing statistic for us was that of those people, only 40% said that they told somebody at work. And of that 40%, only 12% went to their union for help. And that was, for us, just crushing, right? Because as a trade union movement, we want to be the soft place to land, you know? We want to be there for our members when they're experiencing problems, whether they are problems with their boss or whether there are problems at home that are impacting their work, right? And given that many of these people are facing discipline because their attendance is poor, right, or their performance is bad, 8% of them had lost a job because of the violence, surely we should be able to intervene in a constructive way. And we had a massive response, right? We had 8,429 people fill out this survey. So it is very good data, okay? There's a lot that we still have to analyze, but that those basic statistics we have found to be compelling, right? Compelling to our members, compelling to employers, and compelling to governments. So we're following up as a trade union movement in three ways: member education and awareness, collective bargaining, and legislative action. And so we started off with collective bargaining, and we actually plagiarized shamelessly the Australian model in that they had identified seven key principles for collective bargaining, one of which is paid domestic violence leave, but there are a number of other workplace supports that they wanted good collective agreement language should include. And we had those principles adopted by our Canadian Council, which is the governing body of the Canadian Labour Congress. All of the heads of unions signed on. And we developed model language. Some of it is based on the Australian model, but then we also took the best of Canadian language as well to try and incorporate and inspire people. So we found actually when we did a survey of our affiliates that there was one union in Canada that had negotiated paid domestic violence leave. It was the Yukon Teachers Federation. Yukon is a very small territory in the north of Canada, and they had this groundbreaking thing. And then the other sort of really interesting initiative is the Unifor Women's Advocates, which they have actually had for quite some time. And they are designated union representatives who are specially trained to be able to recognize and respond to the issues that affect women the most, help them connect to supports in the communities, navigate their journeys in the workplace. So we put this stuff together. We actually put a website up called domesticviolenceatwork.ca, where we have some of this language. We have also got advice for shop stewards and so on, and folks started to negotiate. And we have actually had quite a few collective agreements now. Some have negotiated up to, I think, 12 weeks. Yeah, 12 weeks of paid leave. And the reason that paid leave is important is that we don't feel that a worker should have to choose between abuse and a paycheck, right? And people who are experiencing domestic violence, there are many things that they need to do to keep themselves and their family safe, right? And a lot of those things happen during the workday. You need time to meet with a lawyer, get a bank account, find a new place to live, find new childcare for your kid. And so to be able to leave work during the workday, to be able to deal with this stuff and not worry about your job, not have to sneak away or hide it from your employer, is incredibly profound, right? It also provides the employer with a way of being supportive, right? And retaining like good employees. Now we thought we were going to kind of end there. And what we've been doing in order to equip the labor movement to be able to respond better, right, is we've developed a fairly comprehensive education program. So we're training shop stewards and health and safety representatives and frontline kind of union representatives to recognize and respond to the warning signs of domestic violence, the risk factors, to have caring conversations with workers, even when they may not want to come forward, you know, but you know something is going on, to understand when a situation is getting risky and to be able to take the appropriate action. And so we've been rolling that training out over the last little while as well. And we were going to save the legislative piece for last, except that one of our progressive provincial governments decided just to go right to giving all workers access to paid domestic violence leave. In the province of Manitoba, they started a piece of legislation where they reformed employment standards. Any worker in Manitoba who has experienced domestic violence gets 5 paid days, 10 unpaid days, and up to 17 weeks of additional unpaid time if they require. Now other provinces are starting to join in, because as the momentum builds, right? And it doesn't just build magically, it builds because workers unions are organizing in each jurisdiction of our country. Because we have 13 different jurisdictions where employment legislation exists. So we now have 5 days of paid domestic violence and sexual violence leave in Ontario. And just a couple weeks ago in the federal budget, they announced that they also are giving workers in the federal jurisdiction 5 days of paid domestic violence leave. And we're hopeful that we will have more. So it's been a hugely successful campaign. The thing I'll end on is just the idea of why this has had such an impact. And the thing is that everybody knows somebody who has experienced domestic violence, or maybe they are somebody. So when we go out and we talk to workers and unions about this, you can see that people can relate it to some situation that they know, they really care about the issue, and they see it as a tangible thing that they can do to make people's work lives better and safer. And that has been incredibly powerful, I think, for all of us. And it's not just the women in the union, but the men as well have really embraced it and are pushing it forward. I should also say that there's also an international network that is working on the issue of domestic violence at work that's led by our folks at Western and our friend Ludo McBaron from Australia. And the survey is available to be used in any country that wants to use it. We can help with that.
That was Vicky Smallman, Director of Human Rights for the Canadian Labour Congress. Again, Mindy Ran, co-chair of the International Federation of Journalists Gender Council.
Gender-based violence, GBV, against women journalists and media workers can be defined as triple jeopardy. We face the same risks as every other woman, the same risks as our male colleagues, and risks that impact us sometimes because we are women journalists. Globally, journalist unions have had reports of direct forms of violence, targeted violence, torture, murder, femicide, sexual violence, death and familial threats, imprisonment, abuse of sedition and libel laws, bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, domestic partner violence, and online bullying and abuse. We have also had reports of indirect forms of violence, such as being forced into insecure and temporary work, poverty, overt discrimination, and systemic discrimination. A recent survey by the IFJ confirmed the huge scale. 1 in 2 report some form of GBV. But it also showed that 2/3 of the women made no formal complaints, and that 85% of those that did, there was no resolution. Up to 3/4 of media workplaces have no reporting or support mechanisms. It is clear that the current approaches have had a limited impact, and there is a practical disconnect between actions taken so far and real life experiences of women journalists around the globe. I'd like to introduce my IFJ sister, Zuliana Lanes. She is a journalist as well as the president of the Latin American Federation of Journalists, general secretary of the National Association of the Journalists of Peru, and an executive member of the IFJ.
En Latinoamérica decimos que el periodismo es una profesión feminizada.
In Latin America, we refer to journalism as a feminized profession.
Hay más mujeres en las facultades de comunicación y en las redacciones.
There are more women in university journalism schools, as well as working in the newspapers.
Y solemos presentarlo como una bandera de que las cosas están bien.
This is presented as a sign that everything is getting better.
Pero desde los sindicatos detectamos un problema.
But for the unions, this is a sign of problems.
que cuando una profesión se feminiza, se precariza totalmente.
When a profession becomes feminized, it is becoming precarious.
Los salarios estancan y las condiciones de trabajo van para abajo.
The salaries are stuck and the working conditions are getting worse.
El modelo laboral hace que las mujeres periodistas y los hombres también no tengan un empleador.
The working model is to work without a contract.
Paguen dinero para concesionar, para tener un espacio en radio y en televisión.
Many journalists have to pay for their space on radio or television.
Y terminan siendo ellos mismos responsables de todo.
And therefore they're responsible for everything.
Entrando en materia sobre lo que estamos haciendo desde los sindicatos de periodistas en Latinoamérica.
In terms of what the journalists' unions in Latin America are doing,
además de informes, registro y documentación de las violencias,
as well as registering all of the violence,
estamos intentando, como en algunas, que los temas de violencia de género en el periodismo se incorporen en las negociaciones colectivas.
We're trying, for example, to include gender violence in collective bargaining.
Estamos trabajando también, fundamentalmente en este momento, respuestas a temas de ciberacoso, haciendo entrenamientos de seguridad a mujeres periodistas.
At this moment, we're taking action against cyber harassment, giving safety training.
O impulsando, como en el caso de Paraguay, Perú, Argentina, la unión a la actividad que hubo de parar desde el gremio periodístico el 8 de marzo.
And in the cases of Argentina, Uruguay and Peru, we're pushing for a strike on the 8th of March.
Hay un instrumento que ha sido la base del trabajo, que es un manual de seguridad para mujeres periodistas, que titula Buscando el Equilibrio.
There is a tool that has been the basis of our work, a security manual for women journalists that seeks to achieve gender equality.
A partir de ahí, los 8 de marzo y 25 de noviembre, se han impulsado campañas para que más mujeres se afilien a los sindicatos, denunciando la brecha salarial en el periodismo y centrándonos en el acoso laboral y sexual en el periodismo.
From there, every 8th of March and November the 25th, we have been pushing for more women to join the unions, reporting on the gender pay gap and focusing on sexual harassment in journalism.
Thank you very much.
Suliana Lines, president of the Latin American Federation of Journalists, speaking in New York in March 2018. The moderator of this panel, Mindy Ran, is also an associate producer of Wings and co-edited this program. For more information or to hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our new website, wingsradio.org. We also have a page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Thank you to Wings supporters, including WERU-FM, your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, Eleanor Alper, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, The Maternal Roots of the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.